te Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 45. Krishna rescues his teacher's son. Text 45 through 50. Text 45, word meaning Sri Bhagavan Vacha, the Supreme Lord said, Guru Putram, the son of my spiritual master, Iha, here, Anitam, brought Nija, his own, karma, of reactions of past activity, Nibandhanam, suffering the bondage. Anayaswa, please bring, Maharaja, O great king, Mat, my, Shasana, to the command, Pura Kritaha, giving first priority. This is Lord Krishna speaking to Yamaraj. Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Guru Putra Mihanitam Nija Karma Nibandhanam Anayaswa Maharaja Maschasana Puraskrita Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Guru Putra Mihanitam Nija Karma Nibandhanam Anayaspa Maharaja Machchasana Puraskrita Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Guru Putra Mihanitam Nija Karma Nibandhanam Anayaswa Maharaja Machchasana Puraskrita Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Guru Putra Mihanitam Nija Karma Nibandhanam Anayaswa Maharaja Machchasana Puraskrita Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Guru Putra Mihanitam Nija Karma Nibandhanam Anayaswa Maharaja Machchasana Puraskrita Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Guru Putra Mihanitam Nija Karma Nibandhanam Anayaswa Maharaja Machchasana Puraskrita Ladies? Sri Bhagavan Uvacha Guru Putra Mihanitam Nija Karma Nibandhanam Anayaswa Maharaja Chasana Puraskrita. Sri Bhagavan Udacha. Guru Putra Mihanitam. Nijakarma Nibandhanam. Anayasva Maharaja. Matthasana Puraskrita. Translation. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, suffering the bondage of his past activity, my spiritual master's son was brought here to you, O great king. O great king, obey my command and bring this boy to me without delay. We can chant the rest of the verses together. Tate ti te no panitam guru putram yaduttama datva sva gurave bhuyo nirnishveti tam uchatu. Yamaraj said, so be it, and brought forth the guru's son. Then those two most exalted yadus presented the boy to their spiritual master and said to him, please select another boon. Sri Guru Ruvacha Samyak Sampadito Vatsa Bhavadbhyam Guru Nishkraya Konu Yushmad Vidha Guru Kamanam Avashishyate. The spiritual master said, my dear boys, you too have completely fulfilled the disciple's obligation to reward his spiritual master. Indeed, with disciples like you, what further desires could a guru have? Gacchatam svagriham vira kirtirvamastu pavani chandam shayata yamani bhavam tviha paratracha. O heroes, now please return home. May your fame sanctify the world. And may the Vedic hymns be ever fresh in your minds, both in this life and the next. Guru naivam anugyatau ratena nilaram hasa ayata swapuram tata parjanya ninadena vai. Thus receiving their guru's permission to leave, the two lords returned to their city on their chariot, which moved as swiftly as the wind and resounded like a cloud. Sananandam prajasarva drishparama janardana apasyanto bahuani nashtalabdha dana iva. All the citizens rejoiced upon seeing Krishna and Balaram, whom they had not seen for many days. The people felt just like those who have lost their wealth and then regained it. Thus end the purports of the humble servants of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, to the 10th canto, 45th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled Krishna Rescues His Teacher's Son. Oma jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militam yena tasmai shri guruve namaha. We'll go through these verses, see what we can glean from them. Well, Krishna has just completed his pastime of rescuing. This was his guru dakshina. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that his guru dakshina was the guru's son. He presented him to him, Sandipani Muni. We get some inside information from the Lalita Madhava that the guru's son was Madhu Mangal. I had read previously that Purnamasi was the mother of Sandipani Muni and the grandmother of Madhu Mangal, but I didn't know if there was a direct lineage there. But according to Gargi, speaking to Uddhava in the Lalita Madhava. This is, in fact, Madhu Mangal. And not only is Garga Muni the spiritual master of Krishna and Balaram, but Krishna, at least, Madhu Mangal, he also accepted, Krishna accepted Madhu Mangal as his spiritual master also, as his Kali Guru. Kali means pastimes. So I don't know why Krishna would need a guru for his pastimes, but for his Leela, he has accepted Madhu Mangal as his Kali Guru. In fact, we find in many of the Vaishnava literatures, many pastimes, Madhu Mangal is right there in the thick of things. He also plays a role in the Lalita Madhava. So this was Krishna's Guru Dakshina, rescuing his spiritual master's son. Of course, it raises many questions. What was Madhu Mangal doing at Prabhas? He lives in Vrindavan. Anyway, so Krishna is speaking to Yamaraj, and he's speaking as if Madhu Mangal is an ordinary person. Krishna has gone all the way to Yamaloka. I was trying to find the exact reference. I couldn't find it, where exactly Yamaloka is, but Samyamini, that's what it's called, Samyamini. Prabhupada also says in different places that Yamaraj, he says he resides there, but he also says he resides on Pitriloka. So these two are in the same approximate neighborhood, it seems to be, down in the lower part of the universe, way down below. We have the seven planetary systems. You study the cosmology in the fifth canto, of course, seven upper and seven lower, and in the middle is Bhumandala. So underneath Bhumandala, then we have Mahatal and Atal and Vital and Sutal and Rasatal and Patal, all these talas, these subterranean heavenly planets they're called, or sometimes they're called subterranean hellish planets. They're heavenly in enjoyment, but they're hellish in consciousness. The inhabitants are there. So below them, a long ways away, in fact, I was reading in the sun, the movements of the sun are described in the fifth canto. And the sun travels from Indraloka to Yamaloka. And the distance was something like 120 million miles in a matter of moments or seconds or something, really, really quickly. But it's a long ways away. It's a long ways from here, from Prabhas, Kshetra. But Krishna and Balaram, they went there quickly, and they saw Yamaraj in person. And they said, you have someone here who is here as a result of his karma. Nija karma, nibandhanam. That's how everyone ends up there. In the hellish planets, suffering. People don't believe in these things, of course, today. Hellish suffering. They don't want to believe in any consequences of their activities. That's what it gets down to. But people don't believe in God because there was even one scientist, he said, that was our aim, get rid of God so we could do what we want, basically. Scientific philosophy. See if we can get God out of the picture, we don't have to answer to anyone if there's no higher authority. Prabhupada called this the mentality of the vulture is cursing the cow. You heard this example? The vulture wants to eat the cow, so he's circling up above. The cow's still alive, so he's cursing the cow. You die. The cow doesn't have to die just because the cow is cursing and wants to eat. So probably we'd refer to this in reference to the God is dead. I was just working on an article by Satyaraj Prabhu, the God is dead controversy. So this was a phrase from Nietzsche, one of his books. He quoted this, God is dead. Now, he didn't mean literally that God was killed, but his idea was that we've rejected God, the God of Judeo-Christian tradition. We don't have anything to do with him anymore. But later, some other Protestant theologians in around the 60s, they picked up the slogan. It became popular. And then Prabhupada apparently heard about it. Even Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, he quotes it in his preface to the Brahma Samhita. And foolishly, they dare to declare that God is dead. So that was probably directly a reference to Nietzsche around that same time. So in the context of that, probably would point this out. They say that God is dead, but he is not dead. He is, even the vulture is cursing the cow to die, wishful thinking. So your wishful thinking may be that God is dead. We can do anything we want. We don't have to suffer. But you will suffer the consequences. So here Krishna's pointing this out. This person, apparently, as a result of his karma, was brought here because things happen. There's justice in the universe. There's a principle of... There are many universal principles. One of them is justice. Things work out. People have a sense of this. They tend to have a sense of this. That, you know, good things... Just like the idea that why do bad things happen to good people? Because people think, well, that shouldn't be. If you're good, then good things should happen to you. Good things should come your way. Now, the problem, of course, is that people don't have the full perspective. They can't see past, present, and future. They can't see the whole picture. They're only seeing a little speck. They're seeing one frame in the movie, trying to judge the whole thing. But there is justice. Things will work out. Things will be taken... Things will be evened out. The scale of justice, the scales will be balanced. So what you give, you will get back. If you cause suffering to others, you will suffer. That's the principle. It will come back to you. I've heard devotees give the example, just like maybe it's from one of the acharyas, I don't know where it comes from, the idea is if you bounce, like you throw something against the wall and it bounces back to you. You throw a ball, it bounces back to you. And there's an automatic, according to the laws of physics, we can calculate exactly where that ball is going to come back. So it's a sort of mechanical, ordinarily karma is very mechanical like that. You throw it and it will come back. Opposite reaction. But that's karma, that's when you... in ordinary laws of karma. But if you're throwing and Krishna's catching, then he can throw it back however he wants. He can deal with the reactions in any way that he wants. And sometimes it seems like he throws us fastballs or curveballs, and we're going, whoa, where'd that come from? Why is this happening? Why is Krishna doing this to me? But that's what happens. You can say that's what happens to our karma. Krishna takes it. And he gives it out as he wants, or he can change it, whatever he wants. It's up to him. So Krishna, of course, he's not speaking on that platform in this particular verse. He's saying he was brought here, but I'm overriding that, basically what Krishna is saying. I'm the boss. He's telling Yamaraj, I'm the boss. This is quite interesting. He's asserting his authority here. Matshasana, my command, shasdatu. Now this shasdatu, shastra means weapon, or here, shasana, or shasana means command. Shastra means the scriptures. Shastra means weapon. So here, shasana means command, my order. Pura krita. It's translated in the word for word. Pura krita, give first priority, or in the translation, without delay. I'm telling you to do it right now, Krishna is saying. And Yamaraj, of course, what is his position? He's subordinate to Krishna. Some people think he's the highest. I mentioned before, I lived for a few months in Rishikesh. Rishikesh, the place is full of all kinds of bogus ideas, ashrams, Haridwar, Rishikesh, all kinds of concoctions and inventions. And there was one ashram there where their idea was that Yamaraj is the highest, because who can disobey the orders of Yamaraj? Everyone's under his control. So there they were chanting. They knew apparently about the Maha Mantra, but instead of saying Hare Krishna, they were saying Hare Yamaraj. That was their idea. Nobody can surpass Yamaraj, so we better satisfy him. So Yamaraj is great, just like the Yamadutas. Yamadutas are interesting personalities, aren't they? I don't, who knows what kind of karma they have to get that job. I was here at Purushchandra Goswami. His conclusion was that they were impious souls. They had that job. Because if you're torturing people all day, what kind of a person can you be? What your consciousness must be. But somehow they've gotten some mercy. They're working directly under one of the Mahajans. So they're getting some benefit. And also they know something. Because when the Yamadutas, when they arrive to take Ajamil, the dying Ajamil, and then they were stopped by the Vishnudutas. They thought, well, why were we stopped? And the Vishnudutas, they challenged him. You're the representatives of Dharmaraj, Yamaraj, so you have to know what Dharma is. So what is Dharma? Tell us. So they actually gave very nice, if you read what they said, it was really right on. Huh? That Dharma is the laws of the Supreme Lord. Dharma, what is it? Pranihito Dharma. Well, they first, Veda Pranihito Dharma. Dharma is what the Vedas say. And Bhagavat Pranitam, what is that? Dharma Sakshat Bhagavat Pranitam. So what Krishna says, Bhagavan, what he says, that's Dharma. So these two definitions, Dharma is what the Vedas say, Dharma is what Krishna establishes. So they were right on. And they said, this person has been sinful his whole life. Of course we're supposed to punish him. And then when they went to Yamaraj and they said, wait... Actually, they also knew about Narayan, which was interesting. They knew Narayan was the Supreme. But still, they went to Yamaraj and they said, we thought you were, nobody could supersede your orders. And, of course, the Vishnudutas, their reaction to what the Yamadutas said was, whoa, what are you talking about? You're supposed to know religion. How, what has happened to religion? When the order carriers of religion don't know what they're doing. So they had it right, except for one thing, that that Ajamil quoted Narayana, and everything else was, that took care of everything. So similarly, when Krishna comes on the scene, whatever this person might have done, Krishna says, I absolve him. Sarvadharmam parichajya mamekam sharanam braja. Aham tvam sarva papi bhyo moksha yishyami mahasuchaha. It's quite an astounding statement that Krishna is making. Aham tvam sarva papi bhyo. I release you. Don't worry about it, Arjuna. Don't worry about it. Because ordinarily one might think, well, whatever I do, I'm not going to get free of all of my sins. With prayaschitta, for example, you get free of this one or that one. And there's so many sins going back lifetimes and lifetimes and lifetimes. Heaps and heaps of them. So just that one thing, that's all I have to do, Krishna? Yes. Mahasuchaha. Don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. So whatever this person did, Madhu Mangal, apparently in this Leela, don't worry about it. I'll take care of it. So Yamaraj said, okay, so be it right away. Tata, tata, yes. Here, take him. We don't want to mess with you, Krishna. I'm not going to go against your order. I'm your humble servant. Of course, Yamaraj is a Mahajan. So they returned him to the spiritual master. And then Krishna and Balaram, they said, so what else do you want? And he said, I don't need anything else. I'm completely satisfied. You don't owe me anything. That's a nice response to get from the spiritual master. You've served me so nicely. I give you all of my blessings. That's the secret, isn't it? That's what we're trying to do. Get all the blessings of the spiritual master by focused on that. That's really what the guru wants, is that focus of the disciple. Not so much about specifically what the thing is, but the attitude. The attitude of the disciple thinks, of course, I can never repay my spiritual master, but let me try to. Let me just try to repay that. Guru Mukha Vakya. Chitete Koriya Aikya. Arana Koriya Mane Asha. Let me make my consciousness one with the words coming from the spiritual master. I was hearing recently, I was talking with one devotee, Brahmatirtha, and he mentioned that one scholar, he said, your spiritual master said too much, something like that. And he said it in a nice way, but sometimes the guru will only say a few words, you know. But Prabhupada said so many things that, in one sense, it's hard for the disciple to read it all, to hear all the things that Prabhupada said. And then because in different contexts he said different things, then there may be some confusion. Some people take out this one line and that's it. That's the Prabhupada's Mahavakya. Everything flows from that and so on. So to try to understand and to bring it all together, fill out the picture, what was essential. Well, it takes a lot of work, actually. It takes a lot of work to hear Prabhupada, read his books. We get so many controversies. Should we read other books? This comes up now. It's less than, I gave class, I don't know, a few classes ago, and I was making this point emphatically about how, you know, we have to hear everything through Prabhupada. And in that same class, I was quoting other books that Prabhupada didn't translate, and I was thinking after, what a hypocrite I am. I'm quoting Lalita Madhava, and I'm saying we have to get everything through Prabhupada. So, what? So I was reading recently in something by Shivaram Swami. So he was bringing this up, this idea that some devotees were saying to Prabhupada, we heard that you said that we shouldn't read anyone else's books, like the books of Bhaktivinoda Thakur or the Goswamis. Prabhupada said, who said that? I never said. So he clarified it. And he said, no, my concern is that they're not reading my books. And also, I don't like the idea that they're just stacking up books. You know, I'll read this book, then I'll read that book, then I'll read this book, then I'll read that book. And it's like conquering. You know, okay, take that one from the unread pile and put it over in the red pile and just breezing through them so I can chalk them up, mark them off the list. No, the idea is to understand and to be really steeped in Prabhupada's books. But Prabhupada, no, this is parampara. These are the acharyas. How can we not read their books? And Prabhupada says in his books to read their books. So, of course, there's a context to this also. Who should read the books? Are we ready? Do we have the adhikar to read more advanced literature? One thing I've been thinking recently when I hear classes that this is something I face as the editor of BTG, is who is the audience? Because I'm trying to satisfy devotees who've been around 40 years, and I'm trying to satisfy the person who just walked in the temple at the same time. So it's hard to speak. Usually a publication, a magazine, for example, is very focused. They know exactly who they're speaking to. So BTG is speaking to the congregation. We're not speaking to the man on the street, really, not anymore. We're speaking to the congregation, but even the congregation is varied in so many ways. So similarly here, we're giving Bhagavatam class, and now we're talking about the 10th canto. So the tendency is to speak to the devotees who have been around 40 years and have progressed and maybe be ready to hear more advanced topics. But there are also many devotees who are young devotees. Us old-timers tend to think everybody's as old as we are and have been through everything that's happened in the history of ISKCON and so on. So we have to understand things in context. We have to understand, first of all, of course, this is the lesson for everyone, the instruction for everyone is Prabhupada's books are fundamental. And we have to have a very solid foundation in Srila Prabhupada's books and read them and continue reading them. We can never stop reading them. But that doesn't mean that the writings of the previous acharyas are forbidden. Who did they write them for? They didn't write them for us. Are they supposed to be lost after did the Goswamis only write for their contemporaries? And then that's it? Then they're gone forever? No, these are eternal instructions. They're meant for us. So we have to accept what is favorable. Of course, we have this principle. Will this help me in my spiritual life? Another thing that we Prabhupada disciples, I think, sometimes tend to forget that other devotees have gurus who are still present here. And for guidance, they go to their gurus. If there's a question in your life whether you should be reading other books, then you simply ask your guru, is it okay for me to read these other books? Then you can get your answer right there. So guidance is available. So in fact, a lot of controversies in younger devotees' lives can be taken care of in that way. You just ask your spiritual master, controversy solved. What he tells you, that's your answer. So the principle of guru is so important. The guru is meant to be our guide. Prabhupada is the guide for everyone. But we can also take guidance from others to understand Srila Prabhupada's instructions and how they apply in our lives. And when are we ready for different things? Because there are also different levels of instruction. Even in the Bhagavad Gita, of course, the Krishna progresses, actually. The first six chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, they're, in fact, the acharyas tell us they're about karma or karma yoga, and the end is about jnana yoga, the last six chapters, especially. And the middle sections are about bhakti yoga more specifically. So you get different emphases in different places. So we have to try to fit all this together. We have to use our intelligence, and we have to take guidance. So sometimes I feel, after I give class, I'm uncomfortable with myself. I think, oh, did I go beyond what I should be talking about in these classes? We stick to the fundamentals. Somehow or other, we've arrived at the 10th canto, so where the tendency is to speak on higher topics, probably. But we can't forget the foundation. We have to be, one thing I've been thinking of a lot about lately is the idea of, you know, making gradual process throughout our life. So just because we've been around for 30 or 40 years doesn't mean we've made steady progress. Steady progress means you have good sadhana. You're following the regulative principles, you're reading Srila Prabhupada's books, you're chanting your rounds, trying to avoid the 10 offenses. One of those offenses is to maintain material attachments. So if you have all kinds of nonsense going on in your life and you think, well, I've been doing this for 40 years, but you haven't really been doing it well, then what is your adhikar to understand more advanced topics? So we have to see where we are and what we need. And are we following the basic requirements of a disciple? Because things are beneficial to hear, just like when I read, you know, topics about Krishna, that's or Krishna Katha, maybe that didn't come directly from Prabhupada, then I get enlivened, I think. Well, because I want to remember Krishna specifically. This is one of the instructions that Prabhupada gives at the end of the Bhagavad Gita. We should concentrate on this two-handed form of Krishna playing the flute. So when we think about thinking of Krishna, there are so many things that are about Krishna. When I read the second canto, that's about Krishna too, but not about Krishna, exactly Krishna, in Vrindavan, Shyama Sundar. So I want to think about that Krishna. So hearing leelas about Krishna, then these help me think of Krishna, Shyama Sundar. But at the same time, unless I'm fixed up in the Bhagavad Gita, in the earlier cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, then there's danger entering into those sanctified realms, because there, you know, we're getting to see into Krishna's inner chambers. So we have to be very, very careful of not creating offenses. So I'm getting it, somehow I got into this sidetrack, because this, here we're talking about the relationship of the disciple with the spiritual master. So always we have to take guidance of the spiritual master, senior authorities. I came across a verse recently, I think it was in the 6th or 7th canto, where Srila Prabhupada translated the word Gurushu, I think it was, which is a plural of guru. He translated it as the spiritual master and senior godbrothers, or senior disciples of the spiritual master. I thought, well, that's interesting. I never heard Prabhupada say that before. I think it was about service, if I remember correctly. Sir, one must serve the spiritual master or offer homage to the spiritual master, I forget. But because it was in the plural, which incidentally, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says that sometimes the plural is used just out of respect. So he took it that way. But Prabhupada took it in other acharyas also. Because they are different gurus. So Prabhupada included in that definition of guru as senior godbrothers. So we can certainly honor. Of course, there's also the injunction that senior godbrothers should be respected like the spiritual master. So we can get guidance. Another thing that I thought that I've had recently is there are devotees in this movement who have very strictly served Srila Prabhupada heart and soul for many years. And we have to accept the process. If we accept the theory of Krishna consciousness, then we have to accept that they must have made some spiritual advancement. And they can give us guidance. They can speak to us according to their realizations and help us in our spiritual life. So we have mature, advanced devotees in this society who can help guide us and answer our questions and serve as representatives of Srila Prabhupada in our ongoing progress in Krishna consciousness. As they're serving as representatives of Srila Prabhupada for our guidance. All right, forgive me if I said anything inappropriate. Even after so many years giving class, I'm never quite sure of myself. So I'll read just the first verse here. The Supreme Personality of God had said, "Suffering the bondage of his past activities, my spiritual master's son was brought here to you. O great king, obey my command and bring this boy to me without delay." So, any questions? Janmashtami, Prabhu? Oh, Lakshmi Moni, okay. Yeah, it's good. I need to look over there first sometime.
I just read the other day, and I'm trying to think which book that I'm reading. I read it in, but I can't remember which one. But Prabhupada said that we shouldn't just read different books in order to be able to mention different quotes at classes.
Yeah.
He said that the four books, the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Srimad Bhagavatam, Nectar of Devotion, and Bhagavad Gita, were sufficient for us to speak on and to study, and we shouldn't just try to read a lot of different books so that basically we sound exciting at classes.
Isn't that one of the 64 principles in the Nectar of Devotion?
Maybe, but that's not where I read it.
Yeah, I think it is. The idea that, of course, Prabhupada, he sometimes gives a different spin on it. The idea, because I want to come off as a big learned scholar, then I can quote from so many places. But especially, of course, we have our fundamental literature given us by Srila Prabhupada. So we should really be steeped in understanding those books. Yes, Janmashtami Prabhu?
This question is about the eradication of karma. You brought this up.
Uh-huh.
And, Prabhupada has made statements that, you know, at the time of initiation, the spiritual master takes the karma away from the disciple. And but then, you know, what what is the time of initiation? You know, like in the text 5 of Nectar of Instruction, he describes it as a process where one gradually, where one becomes attached to Krishna. And it's a gradual process where one becomes detached from the material and attached to the spiritual. I don't know. You know, if we look at the different consciousnesses that devotees may have, right, and look at my own, it wasn't like I still had, I had karma mishra bhakti, you know, in my consciousness, and you know, karma mishra bhakti still creates karma. You know, for, so I'm wondering if you have some insight that could resolve this. I was discussing this with Lakshmi Moni. I'm taking the disciple course.
Yeah.
And this someone's
gonna have to help me with this one. I don't know the answer to that question.
When the fan is unplugged, I mean, like Gopi, I had a discussion with Gopi Prandan.
That's okay. That ties in with the whole question of what exactly is initiation. The definition of initiation, I don't know that shloka, but Divya Gyan is when you get the Divya Gyan, that's when you're initiated. So it's not when you're sitting in on the fire sacrifice. So that's all connected to this.
So this Dikshara initiation I'm reading. Dikshara or spiritual initiation is explained in the Bhakti Sandarbha by Srila Jiva Goswami. And there's a Sanskrit quote. By Diksha, one gradually becomes disinterested in material enjoyment and gradually becomes interested in spiritual life. It's a, you know, it's like, it kind of underscores earlier, you know, before he quotes from Anchalila. Here's the Anchalila quote, but before the Anchalila quote, he said, the process by which a devotee becomes attached to Krishna is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. And then it says, at the time of initiation, this is a translation, at the time of initiation, when a devotee fully surrenders to the service of the Lord, Krishna accepts him to be as good as himself. Now that's obviously the bhava platform, because one has a qualification to interact with Krishna, you know, because he's sufficiently purified, if Krishna is accepting him as good as himself. I mean, that's the explanation that I've heard from senior devotees like Giri Raj Swami. Do you want me to read that again?
No, yeah, I'm just, it's like, whoa. It's like you're going from initiation to bhava and they're saying...
Well look, listen to what it says. At the time of initiation, when a devotee fully surrenders, I mean, how, did you fully surrender when you were sitting in the fire sacrifice? When the devotee fully surrenders to the service of the Lord, Krishna accepts him to be as good as himself.
There must be different definitions of initiation then, because initiation means the beginning. It doesn't mean... I mean, in one sense, you could say, well, I've surrendered in the sense that I've accepted the spiritual master, and whatever he says, that's what I'm going to do. You could say that's full surrender. I mean, right?
Yeah, I mean, he says like that, but then this point, Krishna accepts him to be as good as himself. But when does that take place? That's a pretty intense statement.
It's just hard to imagine it. I mean, in other words, what I'm saying is that it seems like there must be different definitions of initiation. Then. But you're saying that's when all the karma is burned up at that stage.
No, I mean, what my understanding from a lot of dialogue, like with Dhanadhara Swami, who was a real student of Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and then also Gopi Prandan, they concluded that it took place at the time when the process of Uttama Bhakti is initiated. When it actually crosses over, and is very
now this is a term I heard you use this term recently. Now, we're not all regular students of MIHE, so I'm afraid that many devotees may not know what you're talking about when you say at the stage of practicing Uttama Bhakti. What do you mean by that?
Well, we're working within the parameters of the definition of Uttama Bhakti that Rupa Goswami has given in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Anyabhilashita Sunyam Jnana Karma Dhyanavitam Anukul Yena Krishna Nushilanam Bhakti Uttama. And that's very precise. It's just, you know, one can determine whether he's actually in it or not when he enters into a deep understanding of what it means. It's not,
is that part
a lot of people
it,
confuse this with the Uttama Adhikari platform.
Yeah, well, that's what I'm afraid of.
Yeah, it's a that's common misunderstanding. Right.
But is that part of sadhana bhakti even
of
before Ragatmaka?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, the whole Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu is based upon that sloka, pretty much. It expands from it. So, like, sadhana bhakti, you know, when someone, you know, like the Madhyama platform, Bhaktivinoda Thakur equates coming to the Madhyama platform with the initiation of the practice of Uttama Bhakti in Jiva Dharma. But that, you know, it's sadhana, bhava, and prema, you know, that Uttama Bhakti can be practiced in.
Mm-hmm.
Generally speaking, a Kanishtha Vaishnava doesn't practice Uttama Bhakti. He's got mixed, you know, jnana and karma.
So, I mean, as a simple definition is when you're fully surrendered to the spiritual master and doing everything the best of your ability, was that Uttama Bhakti, and that according
well,
to what
but,
you're
but
saying?
But then why would Rupa Goswami give us such a precise definition? If it was so simple, you know, if we really get serious about are we practicing?
Well, that's included in that. If you're doing only what the spiritual master tells you, then there's no jnana and karma.
That's another way that Prabhupada described it, you know, that one's a pure devotee if he's following everything the guru says. He simplified it in that way. But that's also, you know, can be very precisely analyzed, you know, by going into that definition.
Mukunda Prabhu?
Who'd you say?
No, let's go to Mukunda over here.
So, what I've understood is that Saranagati is the doorway to bhakti. You can do everything.
What do you mean by that?
Bhaktivinoda Thakur said.
No, what do you mean by Saranagati?
Oh, taking everything that's favorable.
Oh, the six principles of surrender. Anukuyasa
Sankapya, Pratikuyasa Vivajanam. These six things of Saranagati, they're the doorway to bhakti. Now, a person may, in fact, follow everything the spiritual master says, but still not have given his heart. He may be following out of obedience. So at that point, Atma Nikshepa Karpanya, his actual giving of himself is not fully present yet. He's following, but he hasn't actually given his heart to that. So for instance, if the spiritual master is not present, he may deviate from that thing. So,
He doesn't do it when the spiritual master is not present, but he's not following.
So the only way to do that is if he's actually done this principle that's mentioned in Madiksha. It says, Diksha Kale Bhakta Kare Atma Samarpan. He gave his Atma. So if you gave your Atma, that means spiritual master is present and not, you're following because you gave your entire self. So at that point that he's given his entire self, it says, Sekale Krishna Kare Atma Sam. That point Krishna makes him like himself. So here Saranagati means when he's done Atmanivedan, when he's actually given himself. So as Prabhu mentioned in the very beginning, Diksha is a process. When we sat down at the fire sacrifice, took the vows, that was a part. But then it unfolds over a period of time to the point where we've become fully surrendered and eventually have also gone through the different stages like Shraddha, you know, et cetera, except Sadhu Sangha, Bhajana Kriya, Nishtha, Ruchi, like that. They work hand in hand. So Uttama Bhakti also is divided into three, like he said, is Sadhana, Bhav, and Prem. So it's not as confusing as it seems.
But I think that maybe what, at least the doubt I have is, is Atma Nivedanam, Atma Nikshepa Karpani. So that full surrender,
yes.
Is that possible for a sadhaka?
Yes.
Because that sounds like pure devotion.
At some point, you'll come to that, right? At some point, you'll reach a point where you've given every... If not, then it would be like the practice had no real end result. And that would be pretty discouraging.
But then it seems like your practice is complete in one sense. You've risen out beyond sadhana bhakti if you're actually fully surrendered.
But if you fully surrender, then you obtain bhav, then you'll practice in bhav to obtain prem. So it has to be some goal.
So atman, that atman nikshepa, that's bhava platform. That's what you're saying?
Hare Krishna, thank you for your wonderful class as usual. Just two simple points that you mentioned. When I'm distributing books, it's so nice that Prabhupada had given us an instruction concerning the philosophy, this movement, everything that is not religion but is Dharma, is a science. Mm. Because a lot of people said, okay, this is not religion, right? So we can back up on that and give these books anyway. So that's one thing. And the other thing about Prabhupada telling us too much or so much. Yeah, Prabhupada gave us everything, and everything is there, and we don't need to listen, or, you know, like, simple for the simple. So if we follow, if we read, then everything. And for you guys that can go further, that's so nice, because then we can hear from you. But, yeah, I like that. I like that Prabhupada gave us so much, but at the same time, enough for this Kali Yuga to understand. Like, I was thinking about Jesus Christ when he came to preach to the fishermen. He said, I'm not going to tell you more because you wouldn't understand. But Prabhupada, as a causeless mercy giver, you know, he gave us more than enough, and we have to take advantage of it. Thank you.
Hare Krishna. I just remember the point about reading other books. I just remember I think it was the end of 1971, I was on the roadshow and people were reading something by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati. And I just remember a clear instruction that Prabhupada said, my books are written for my disciples. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati wrote for his disciples. That was clear to me, but I really don't remember the source of that. I mean, I thought it came directly from Prabhupada.
Yeah, I was going to, actually, I don't have access to it, but I was, you know, what I read this morning, I wasn't able to print it out. But there was a discussion with Prabhupada, and they asked him specifically, Prabhupada, did you say, and he said, no, I never said that. And his clarification was, I just don't want, you know, people just piling up books like I'm a big scholar and I have all these. And one thing, I kind of hear things. I don't talk a lot to outside devotees, but there's some criticism that in ISKCON there's a danger of disconnecting Prabhupada from the parampara. So this is one of the criticisms, because those devotees who are maybe a little bit more connected with the Gaudiya Math, they think that we want, you know, we're just taking Prabhupada completely away from the you know, his lineage, his heritage, and so on. So I think there's some, you know, some grain of truth. At least we have to be careful of that. Prabhupada's not on his own. And how can Prabhupada say that, you know, to just reject, you know, the writings of the previous acharyas? You know? Now, we have to be careful because, of course, you're saying not reject them, but get them through Prabhupada, because he's saying the same thing, I suppose, is what you're saying. But in fact, one thing is that, for example, the Goswami, Prabhupada wanted the Tapasandarbhas to be translated. So those are the writings of the Goswamis. So if they're done by chaste disciples of Srila Prabhupada who are presenting these books, and also in Prabhupada's books, Prabhupada tells us to read these other books. So, you know, you can say everything's in Prabhupada's books, but in Prabhupada's books he says read these other books too. Yeah. Of course, he also says, unless you read all of my books, you're going to fall down. So that's the first thing. Yeah, Vaikuntha Prabhu?
Just to muddy it up a little bit more, I just happened to be here yesterday for the Prabhupada Memories, and maybe somebody else was here too, but Rivatinandan Prabhu, he gave a very specific quote. He was walking out of the Calcutta temple with Prabhupada, must have been early 70s, and he'd become aware that a nearby Gaudiya Math was selling Brahma Samhita, which at that time was pretty new to the devotees, and he was interested, he was philosophical, you know, getting a copy and reading it. And he asked Prabhupada, and he asked the question about the Brahma Samhita, and then he kind of stretched it to, so can we get, you know, the Gaudiya Math books from this temple bookstore? And he said Prabhupada gave, from his memory, he said Prabhupada gave 3 points. And the first point was more or less, he either said, I don't think, or I'm not sure if you'll be able to understand it. That was point one. And point two, he said, anything published after 1932 you definitely shouldn't get, because after that time, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta had stepped back from personally overseeing it, and there were some politically motivated things that may have come into the actual books being sold. And the third point he said was that a disciple should feel that I can get everything from my spiritual master's writings. So that just, I'm just throwing that in because I happened to see it yesterday. Mm-hmm. And I think you answered it in principle already, but just wanted to throw it in there. Hare Krishna.
You asked me, Prabhu.
This resolves this point, you know, about practicing Uttama Bhakti even in a sadhana platform. If you don't mind, it's the attitude that a disciple, that a devotee should have, and then it makes it possible. This is 11th canto, 20th chapter, 27-28 purport. And the start of the purport, it says this is the beginning of pure devotional service. So here, this is a commentary from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, even though Gopi Prananda doesn't attribute it to him here, but that's where it's coming from. By my previous shameful life, my heart is polluted with many illusory attachments. Personally, I have no power to stop them. Only Lord Krishna within my heart can remove such inauspicious contamination. But whether the Lord removes such attachments immediately or lets me go on being afflicted by them, I will never give up my devotional service to him. Even if the Lord places millions of obstacles in my path, and even if because of my offenses I go to hell, I will never for a moment stop serving Lord Krishna. I'm not interested in mental speculation and fruitive activities, even if Lord Brahma personally comes before me offering such engagements. I will not be even slightly interested. Although I'm attached to material things, I can see very clearly that they lead to no good because they simply give me trouble and disturb my devotional service to the Lord. Therefore, I sincerely repent my foolish attachments to so many material things, and I'm patiently awaiting Lord Krishna's mercy.
Of course, you have to believe what you're saying.
Yeah, that's the tough part. You know?
Pushkar Prabhu? Let's finish up with this.
I just wanted to get back to the Sandipani Muni in Mount Mangal. Are we sure that this is not a different son that he rescued from the... It seems to me it's not Mata Mangal, but is there some Brahmana for that?
I read it. I had heard it.
Well, that, oh, I know. Even though that's his son of Sadhguru, I mean, he had other sons, right? I mean, can you...
I read it specifically that in the Lalita Madhava.
Definitely him.
That Gargi is telling...
It's Gargi funny because his name's
telling
not given.
Uddhava.
He's such a prominent person in Krishna Lila, but his name isn't given here or anything.
Gargi is telling Uddhava that Krishna rescued Madhu Mangal from Yamaloka.
Specifically, it's Madhu Mangal.
Yeah, that's what it says.
It's not in the Bhagavatam.
It was in Lalita Madhava. So now we know in Chaitanya Charitamrita there's a whole discussion of Lalita Madhava between Ramananda Roy and Lord Chaitanya, and everyone is going, wow, what a book, this is amazing. And so certainly it's an amazing book. And Rupa Goswami isn't going to write something bogus in Lalita Madhava at all. So that's the authority. I mean, I had that one quote, and it's there verbatim. But when I read it too, I said, "Wow, that's pretty."
Just the phenomenal thing is that it's not mentioned there. And like I said, your boss was doing.
Okay, we're going to sign off here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.